Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q3 FY26 iValue Info Solutions Limited earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now hand the conference over to Mr. Pratik Jagtap from EY. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Muskan. Welcome, everyone, and good evening, and thanks for joining the earnings call of iValue Info Solutions Limited for Q3 FY26. The results have been mailed to you along with the investor presentation, and it will be also available at www.iValueGroup.com. In case anyone does not have the copy of the investor presentation, please do write to us, and we will be happy to share it with you. We have the top management with us: Mr. Sunil Pillai, Chairman and Managing Director; Mr. Krishna Raj Sharma, Executive Director; and Mr. Swaroop Muwalla, Chief Financial Officer. Mr. Sunil will start the call with a brief company overview and business update, and then Swaroop will take us through the financial performance for the quarter and 9 months gone by. Then we will open the floor for a Q&A session. Before we start, I would like to remind you that anything that is mentioned on this call that reflects any outlook for the future or which can be construed as a forward-looking statement must be viewed in conjunction with the risks and uncertainties that we face. These risks and uncertainties are included but not limited to what we have mentioned in the prospectus filed with SEBI and subsequent annual reports that you can find on our website. Having said that, I'll now hand over the call to Mr. Sunil Pillai. Over to you, Sunil.
Thanks, Pratik. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Q3 FY26 earnings call. Let me begin with a brief update on the quarter. Q3 FY26 was a normalized yet decent quarter for iValue. This comes on the back of Q2, which was our best-ever quarter. As you know, Q2 was exceptionally strong due to the closure of some large, long-awaited deals that created a very high base for comparison. On a sequential basis, our gross sales declined by 24.5% quarter-on-quarter purely due to timing of deal closures. In our business, large deals are significantly influenced quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year numbers, and such swings are not unusual. However, the underlying momentum of the business remains steady and healthy. On a yearly basis, we are happy to report strong growth. Gross sales grew by 22.4% year-on-year, and the PAT increased by 17.9% year-on-year. This performance reflects disciplined and consistent execution across our core technology segments, which we usually call out, that is, cybersecurity, data center infrastructure, information lifecycle management, and application lifecycle management, cloud, and others. Our annuity-led business continues to scale well. It grew 34.1% year-on-year in 9 months FY26 and now constitutes a steadily increasing share of our overall gross sales. This shift strengthens revenue visibility, improves stability, and enhances margin predictability. Renewals remained resilient during Q3, particularly across BFSI and government verticals. Our funnel continues to remain healthy, giving us good visibility as we move into Q4. We have continued to deepen our partnership with OEMs and system integrators. We have done business with 500+ unique partners in this quarter. We are expanding our center of excellence and investing in pre-sales, post-sales, and service capabilities. These remain our key differentiators for us. They help us build complex multi-OEM solution-led opportunities and build long-term relationships across BFSI, government, healthcare, manufacturing, and enterprise segments. As always, our business follows a certain seasonal pattern. with H2 being stronger than H1. We continue to execute in line with that rhythm and remain confident about Q4. We reiterate to all of you our FY 2026 guideline or guidance of around 18% gross sales growth and 20%-22% PAT growth on a year-on-year basis. This is backed by steady execution, annuity scale-up, and strong OEM and SI program momentum. Having given that, if some of you were there part of my last earnings call, and if you recall, I would like to touch upon a new area of business that is opening up and which could prove for all of us a greater opportunity to address those. That is, I'll take a step back and speak about the broader opportunity we see emerging, particularly around AI and OT. India is entering the next phase of AI adoption. The first phase was about pilots and experimentation. The next phase is about AI moving into physical systems like factories, power grids, you name it, like logistic networks, refineries, hospitals, and transport systems, and many more. This is the AI plus OT inflection point that we call it. India's AI market has expanded rapidly from about $1.25 billion in 2024 to nearly $13 billion in 2025, and it is expected to reach around $17 billion by 2027. Today, the constraint is not intent or spend. The constraint is capability. Infrastructure must support high-density compute. Security must understand cyber-physical risk. Organizations must manage AI models and data over long operating life cycles, especially in mission-critical environments. India today has more than 80,000 GPUs deployed. We have 1,263 MW of data center capacity operating at nearly 97% utilization. Around 78% of enterprises are using AI in one form or the other in at least one function. However, more than 60% of industrial organizations today still operate legacy OT systems with limited visibility and minimal security integration. This gap is creating a significant opportunity across four converging domains, precisely where iValue operates. That is data center and edge infrastructure, cybersecurity for cyber-physical systems, ALM cloud and AI platform, information and model lifecycle management. We believe this convergence of AI with operational system will define the next multi-year technology cycle in India. It aligns strongly with our capability build-up and strategic direction. Let me briefly touch each of this, how it's going to be operationally beneficial for iValue. Let's take data center and edge infrastructure. AI workloads are fundamentally reshaping infrastructure requirements, which we all know. Current data center capacity is operating to near saturation, and India's total capacity is expected to scale to about 8,000 MW by 2030. This expansion will require significant investment, not just in core data centers, but also in surrounding infrastructure, edge nodes, power systems, cooling architectures, and managed services. When AI converges with OT, inference workloads increasingly move closer to the edge. If I have to give an example, it's like you have a camera and you take a photo and you send it to the cloud, you process it and bring it. Here I'm talking about an AI tool that is already inbuilt into the camera. So when you take a photo, it processes it then and there itself. That is what means by closer to the edge. This demands high availability infrastructure, deterministic networking, low latency architectures, and resilient power designs capable of operating in industrial environments. Every large-scale industrial AI deployment triggers parallel investment, both in centralized data centers and distributed edge nodes. This materially expands the opportunity across infrastructure design, system integration, lifecycle support, and managed services. Now, this trend directly aligns with our strength in data center infrastructure and positions us well to participate in the next wave of capacity expansion. Moving on to cybersecurity, which we all know, when AI connects to OT, the attack surface expands significantly. OT-related incidents now account for nearly 25% of major cyber incidences in manufacturing and energy sectors. Downtime costs in OT-heavy industries are very, very high. Cybersecurity is now moving from IT risk to cyber-physical risk. Growth will be driven by AI-driven threat detections, OT-aware SOC, that is Security Operations Center, automated response across IT and OT, and protection of AI models and pipelines. This shift is a natural extension of our cybersecurity portfolio and aligns well with the capabilities that we have built over the years. Moving on to ALM, that is Application Lifecycle Management, Cloud and AI Platform. AI is changing how software is built and managed. AI-assisted development reduces coding and testing time by 25%-30%. AI-native ALM platforms are growing exponentially, but in OT environment, reliability matters more than speed. Application life cycles are longer. Continuous validation, observability, and rollback capabilities become critical. Enterprises are increasingly adopting hybrid cloud plus edge architectures to support these workloads. Now, this creates a sustained demand for enterprise-grade application lifecycle management and cloud platforms, another area which we are building strong capabilities. Last but not the least, information lifecycle management. AI is only as trustworthy as the data behind it, which we all know. Organizations now need to manage training data, real-time OT data streams, model drift, regulatory compliance, and long-lived models operating in physical systems. ILM becomes foundational for safe and explainable AI. Demand for AI-ready ILM solutions is accelerating across regulated sectors. This plays directly into our ILM focus. If you look at the combined impact of infrastructure, cybersecurity platforms, and lifecycle management, the opportunity linked to AI-driven infrastructure transformation is substantial over the next few years. And that is where we are building our capability to play a larger role. A significant portion of this opportunity will come from OT-heavy sectors, where AI adoption directly affects physical systems, operational continuity, and safety. These industries will require deeper investment across infrastructure, modernization, secure connectivity, intelligent platforms, and long-term lifecycle governance. Our positioning across these four pillars gives us structural relevance to this next phase of technology adoption. It is not a tactical opportunity for us. It is aligned to the core capabilities we have built and strengthened over time. As we speak, all these trends give us strong confidence and momentum as we move forward to FY27. Looking ahead, we see continued strength in the business. We expect sustained double-digit growth supported by further scale of our annuity business, increasing contribution from AI-led infrastructure and cybersecurity opportunities, which I mentioned already, expansion in services and managed offerings, continued operating leverage as scale improves. Our focus remains disciplined, profitable growth, healthy cash flows, and long-term value creation. We are investing in capabilities, partnerships, and execution depth that can sustain performance over multiple years. With that, let me hand over to Swarup to walk you through the detailed financial performance, and thank you for having the patience to listen to me. Over to you, Swarup.
Thank you. Thank you, Sunil. Good evening, everyone, and thank you. Thank you for taking your time for joining our Q3 earnings call. It's a pleasure to meet you all once again. Before we go into the detailed financial highlights and other things, I would just like to take a step or take a lead from what Sunil has spoken and then talk about the nature of the business we do. In our business, we support large enterprise customers in their digital transformation journey. We support them across our four tech segments, which is cybersecurity, DCI, which is data center infrastructure, ILM, information lifecycle management, and ALM, application lifecycle management, cloud, and others. Given this nature of the business, which we do, this is largely influenced by large deals. Our average deal size is anywhere around 1 crore, with the largest deal going up upwards of 150 crores. Hence, when you look at the numbers and see when you look at the performance, looking at it on a mere quarter basis can be a bit myopic if there are any large deals in the current quarter or the previous quarters. For example, if you take our last 12 months performance, we would have grown in close to around 20% on gross sales over compared to the previous 12 months. And our PAT is north of 22-23% growth as compared to the previous 12 months. Having said that, if you look at the key highlights for the quarter and the 9-month period, it is like this. We have seen growth in the gross sales for the quarter and for the full year. Our gross margins have improved by more than 50 basis points during the quarter as compared to the last year, and 65 basis points in this quarter as compared to the last quarter. Our annuity business grew around by 34.1% on a year-on-year basis. Working capital days have been predominantly flat at 51 days. We are currently sitting on a strong pipeline of 4,500 crores, which we believe will be closed in near future. Finally, I think this quarter shows a strong performance in terms of financial prudence, operational discipline, which helped in GM growing faster than sales and PAT growing in faster than the gross margin. Let us look at a quick summary of our performance for the quarter and the 9 months gone by. Gross sales for the quarter stood at 670.1, which is around 3.1% growth year on year. Gross sales for the 9 month period stood at 2,164 crores, reflecting a strong growth of 22.4% on a year on year basis. This growth has been a broad base, not just in one sector or anywhere. It has been a very broad base things. On a net basis, our net sales stood at around 225.7 crores for Q3 26. This is a degrowth of 9.6% on a year-on-year basis. For the 9-month FY26, the net sales stood at 783 crores. This is an 18.3% growth on year-on-year basis. As you all know, we measure our business on the gross sales. The difference between the gross sales and net sales is because of the change in the hardware and software mix. Talking about the revenue mix, three of our four segments have grown on a double-digit basis during the 9-month period. Cybersecurity has been our main go-to engine, and it has grown more than 30% on a year-on-year basis, while both BCI and ILM grew by 16 and 23% respectively during the same period. Our annuity-led business has been a core strength and differentiator for us, which has contributed to around 41.9% of our gross sales for the 9-month period. This grew by 34.1% on a year-on-year basis. This showcases the strong revenue predictability and cash flow quality which we have generated over the period. Our gross margin stood at 58.9 crores, and this gross margin percentage is at around 8.8% on gross sales. Our operating EBITDA for Q3 FY26 stood at 30.1 crores. This is 7.1% growth on year-on-year basis, and for the 9-month period, it stood at 90.4 crores. This is a 19.9% growth on a year-on-year basis. The PAT for us stood at 20 crores. This is a 12.1% growth on a normalized basis on a year-on-year compared to the last Q3. The PAT for the 9-month period is 60 crores. The overall growth is around 26.9% on PAT on the year-on-year numbers. All these numbers which I mentioned with regards to operating EBITDA and PAT are before taking the impact of the labor code and the one-time tax benefit which we have got accrued in Q3 25 or Q3 last year. Now, let us spend a minute on the impact of the labor code. I'm sure as investors, you would have seen in many other companies as well that the new labor code which has come in warrants the organizations to make provisions as per the new definitions of wages which is there. As an organization, we have taken that approach for making provisions with regards to gratuity and leave encashment, and we made an incremental provision of around 5.7 crores to this effect. As a company, we are in the process of restructuring the salaries of the employees so that we'll be in compliance with the labor code. There is a high likelihood that this provision might change, in fact, come down once the entire restructuring is complete. We'll share the exact details once the entire restructuring activity is complete. Moving on, if you have to talk about certain return ratios and balance sheet figures, our working capital continues to be a good number without any great changes as compared to last year. The net working capital days is around 51 days for the quarter ending or for the period, for the 9 month period ending 31st December 2025. Our adjusted ROCE before the exceptional items, which is the impact of the labor code, is at 21.5% and ROE is at 15.3%. We remain committed to a margin discipline, cash conversion and balance sheet strength while executing towards our FY26 objectives. We still are confident of achieving our stated goals of around 20% on a gross sales and 20 to 22% on a PAT growth on a year-on-year basis for FY26 as compared to the previous year. Thank you for joining us. I'll hand over to the moderator to open the floor for question and answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Vaidik Sarkar from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Hi, morning, and thanks for taking my question and a couple of them. We understand the impacts of the large deal in quarter two, but including that as well, for us to meet our annual targets for FY26 calls for a certain high mark in Q3, right? And we've passed that, which means now the high mark stands transferred to Q4. Given that we're one third into the fourth quarter, gentlemen, are we on track for this number? And I'm obviously talking about just the PAT number, which is 22% YOY growth. Or is this endeavor significantly back-ended towards the last 2 weeks of March where we expect to close a few deals?
Thanks. Thanks, Vaidik, for that question. The way we see is like this. The number of amounts of bookings which we have, which we are, where the orders are in hand, which we are about to execute and deliver, and the amount of cases where we are highly confident on the orders coming in, probably in the next 3 to 4 weeks and then delivering it by March, I think we are confident of hitting the number what we have stated.
Right. So which means there still might be a tad bit of uncertainty in March if there are slight deferrals or delays at the client end, right? I mean, I'm just talking of regular business cases. I mean, they're not in the bag, so as to say.
A significant portion of the orders which we are looking at are already in the bank, and a few of them are still working on them.
So I understand.
Our business model is like this. It is not that we will have the order book which for the next 6 months or 8 months up before itself. We do a lot of pre-sales work, and the pre-sales work which includes value addition to the customer, value addition to the system integrator, in solutioning the deal and all the aspects which you are very well aware of. After the entire pre-sales work is done and we have the purchase order in hand, the delivery takes anywhere between 2 to 4 weeks depending upon the nature of the equipment which is there, depending upon hardware, software and all that stuff. So given that, we are on track is what we believe.
Sure, thanks for that. Secondly, Swaroop, on the annuity bit, how should we understand the profitability bit of this annuity? Can you just carve out the EBITDA, the EBIT margins of just the annuity run rate of our business?
But it is like this, right? What is the annuity business which we are talking? The annuity business is the recurring nature of the business which we have. When we work with our system integrators and the end customers for any opportunity, the end customer will always talk to the system integrator on a total cost approach, the TCV for the next 5 years, 3 years, 7 years, whatever it is. But when we talk to our OEMs, when we talk to the system integrators, we also give them the quote on that aspects only for the total period which he is looking at. However, the system integrator in turn places orders on us on an annual basis. So at any given point of time, we know that what are the deals which are going to come back to us in the next year and each quarter, and that we call it as an annuity recurring business for us.
No, I understand that, Swaroop. So say, for example, stuff that you build in the third year, fourth year, because there's no fixed cost involved in selling or reselling that. I'm just trying to understand the margin profile of that particular business, right? Yeah.
Yeah, coming to that, when you see on a gross margin basis, there will not be any significant difference between the first sale as well as the renewal sale, because all of them are negotiated together at a single point of time. But when it comes to the EBITDA margins, while as a company, we don't, track the EBITDA margins per the annuity business separately. But what we can tell you is the sales effort which is required for the renewal business is significantly lower than that of a new sale. Hence, our EBITDA margins will be significantly higher for our renewal business. It will be higher by at least 1 to 1.5 percentage points as compared to our normal business.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to understand why the carry on that business or, your gross margin on that business doesn't come down to PBT. Because, I mean, if this is a SaaS solution that you're selling and there's no incremental fixed cost involved, ideally, a bulk of that should just flow down to your PBT, right? Am I missing something in that construct?
I mean, you're partially right on that. That is what I'm trying to say. The sales effort for our renewal business is significantly lower, but you'll have certain amounts of fixed costs, which are office rentals, everything which gets apportioned. Second, you'll have the people who drive the entire renewal business, where you have to talk to the OEM, system integrators, get the orders loaded, ensure that the entire products are delivered, the operations teams, the finance teams, everything are there. Hence, it will not be a complete flow down into a PBT, but the cost will be significantly lower. That is the reason why we are saying that it will be at least 100 to 150 basis points more than the normal business terms of an EBITDA.
Got it. And lastly, in Mr. Pillai's opening remark, I think he alluded to the fact that he expects sustained operating leverage at the business level, right? So how should we read this in terms of your margin cadence, in terms of how your margins should look 12, 24 months down the line?
As we grow in size, operating leverage is something which we are seeing it. If you see in our this quarter as compared to the last quarter also, our operating EBITDA grew faster than our GM, and our PAT has grown much faster than our operating EBITDA. So operating leverage is something there, but this would not be a very, significantly a different number. The way we look at it is, if we are able to achieve 15 basis points of operating leverage every year, that would be a right number for us.
Sure. And in terms of the cash buildup that we have, Swaroop, I understand that working capital limit is only so much. Any comments on your cash utilization in terms of incremental M&A or payback to shareholders? I know we've discussed this in the past, but any new thoughts on this on this subject?
Yes, we have discussed this in the past, Vedik. We believe that we are in a unique proposition addressing the Indian customers. If there is any suitable M&A opportunity, which we always come up for, and if there is something which is progressing well, we'll keep you posted on that. But what I can say is we'll be looking out, and we are looking out in the market. If we can get good opportunities, we'll definitely keep you posted on that. The second portion is with regards to the paybacks to the shareholders, either in the form of dividends or buybacks or whatever it is we discussed in the past. As we mentioned, the board is of the view that let the first year go by after the full year performance in the listed space. And at that point of time, the board will discuss and take a call on that.
All right. Thank you, everyone. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amar from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Am I audible to you? Hello.
Yes, Amar.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Thanks a lot. Firstly, on the performance front, what I understand here is that in Q2, we were having a very decent pipeline and strong growth was expected in second half. So firstly, on that line, a 3% growth on a year-over-year basis on a third quarter, is there something like, do we see the spillover effect or something like that in the fourth quarter?
Yeah. Couple of points on that. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Hello?
Can I come in?
Yeah, yeah, please. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I thought somebody else was speaking, hence.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, our nature of business, given the size of deals which we operate, ranging from 1 crore to 150 crores, it is always good for us, if we look at the business holistically on a slightly larger period. One quarter, if you see it, it appears to be it is a flattish number, but if you see the nine-month performance, we are growing more than 22% on our top line and close to around 27% on the bottom line on a normalized basis. Generally, yes, our Q2s or H2s are much stronger than the H1s. This is what I have explained in my last call as well. This year, given the fact that we had a very large deal in Q2, we still believe that H2 is going to be better than H1, but it would not be in the same range as that of the previous year. If you see the previous year, almost 60% of our PAT has come in, what you call it, as in the second half. This year also, we see, we assume that it will be in similar lines.
Okay. 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 So, what you're saying is, what you're saying is basically, the fourth quarter would be the bulkiest quarter for you in terms of, to annualize growth number?
Yes.
Yes.
Traditionally, it has been like that. So hence, we continue with that, the same rhythm.
Okay. And secondly, sir, in terms of the segmentation, like we talk about cybersecurity, data center, and you alluded that, you know, this is like a multi-year tailwind kind of a sector for us. Typically, let's say in these two buckets, data center as a vertical, typically, what is our kind of our product consumption in, let's say, 1 MW data center? What is the kind of software which we supply or the hardware which we'll supply, will go into the 1 MW of data center?
No, it is not priced that way. I wish we could do that.
Yeah.
Typically, when we talk about what they are going to place in the data center, so with the 1 MW, I don't think even a GPU would work there. But what we do is that we have switching, routing, and all those things from a very large OEM, wherein a GPU comes, they are the most significant player there, and that's what we position, that's what we sell there.
Okay.
They are more relevant for a data center kind of a thing. We are not a generalist, as we told you last, when in most of our discussions. We don't play in a normal data center space. We play in a large data center wherein, you know, typically GPUs are utilized.
Okay.
That is where we significantly play with the solutions that we represent. We are not in the lower, what you call, routing, switching space.
Okay. So let's say now, in a 1 MW AI data center, typically, what would be like percentage of consumption of our hardware and software, which will go into that?
It all depends on what is the services this data center wants to provide to the market.
Why I'm asking this?
There is no standardization as such, because it's all about the services that they render from that, their data center.
I mean, any number which you can give, like when we are talking about India becoming a, you know, data center hub, typically, what is the range of services you give and-
Our portion, if you're asking me, if I'm not risking my reputation, our portion should be now about sub 20% overall.
Sub-20% to the overall-
Yeah, which includes software, hardware, and all the, what you call, maybe a storage and everything. So ILM, cybersecurity, DCI, everything put together.
Okay. Okay. And typically, what we supply the cabling, we supply the,
No, we don't supply the cabling, sir.
Then we do... What all we do into the, when you say storage, because storage-
We do storage. We do a high-end server computing.
Okay.
We do that. We do the, what you call high-end routing switching.
Okay.
We do VAN-OP.
Okay. Okay. And this is kind of according position. This is according to you, the services you give is like 20% of the overall
Yeah, it would be sub 20%, sir, to be very frank.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
It all depends on what services they provide. Then if cyber security comes, they want to secure certain data that has been stored, then obviously our pie keeps going up. It all depends on the, but then since you asked me 1 megawatt, you want to relate it with that, I'm saying it would be sub 20%.
Okay. Okay. And typically.
Thank you.
Sorry, I lost you.
Participant left the queue, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, please limit a question to 2 questions per participant. Do you have follow-up question? We request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Stavan Thakkar from Chris PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So as you mentioned the AI and cybersecurity space, and given on the lines of your last on call when you mentioned 2,500 crore pipeline or funnel for Q3, how do we look about that after the fact and in the Q3 performance? And going forward, is there any figure that you can quantify given to this space, cybersecurity and AI?
So Chris, right now as we speak, you know, we have a funnel pipeline of over close to 4,500 crores.
Okay. And can we...
So that could be potentially, that could be some that will spill over to next financial year, and that could be or beyond that. And some of them would get closed in this quarter. But overall okay. Pipeline, if you're asking me, this is what it is currently as part of our qualified, pruned, Neat CRM.
All right.
Pipeline. Otherwise, you have many, like we can go up to 7,000, 8,000, but I'm just talking about the one qualified.
Okay. Okay. And can we qualify in terms of what segments are we looking at on the pipeline side, like cybersecurity, AI, PCI?
It is spread across, Chris, it's spread across all the 4 sectors, the pillars of our this, you know, offering.
Okay. And given given your segment on the AI tools, do we see or foresee any launch of any products or anything, any upgraded product that you can offer on the AI side of things?
Yeah, to be very frank, Chris, we are definitely pursuing those kind of technology, and we know that AI has been very loosely being spoken about right now. While infrastructure is still far away from it, today if you want to adopt an AI, your infrastructure should support it. I think it is still being pursued by a lot of enterprises, but they are going for it, and we will be definitely ready by the time the market will blossom into it. So we are building our capabilities. We are looking at those kind of OEMs, and definitely we will be in that space. So in short, what I'm saying is that definitely we are going to step on those pedals.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Darshil Javeri from Crown Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, hi. So sorry for the disturbance. Firstly, just wanted to ask, sir, in terms of, Q2 that you were saying we had a big deal, could we quantify that? Because I think in the last call we were mentioning, you know, H2 is usually 60% of the revenue and we had kind of, you know, a degrowth in H2 in terms of sales. So just wanted to, you know, ask how big was the deal, sir, in Q2?
Thanks, Darshan. The Q2 one-off large deal was north of 150 crores, which we had in this. And second, coming to the second point regarding to the H2 numbers, we always said that H2 will contribute more than around 60% of our total PAT. And I think we are still saying the same thing. For the full year basis, if you look at, H2 will contribute north of 60% of our, or close to 60% of our PAT for the full year.
Okay. Fair enough, sir. And sir, with regards to like in terms of FY27, like what kind of guidance can we look at it, sir? Because FY22, you you mentioned a very clear-cut guidance. So can we expect, you know, a bit higher growth than FY26 because we have such a great pipeline, you know? So any kind of color that you could mention in that, sir?
So Darshan, thanks for that. As an organization, we don't give a forward-looking guidance for such a long period, given the fact that we are in the, what you call it, as fag end of FY26. We come out and then are giving the guidance for FY26. But having said that, you could have understood from the commentary made by us, which is Sunil, myself, in this conversation about the pipeline, about the opportunities which are shaping out, about the AI coming in, about our play around it, and all that stuff, that the opportunities are looking bright. We would just say that and leave it there.
Okay, sir. Fair enough. And so just wanted to know, you know, a bit thoughts on our trade receivable. Like, in terms of our gross sales also, it's quite high, right? So what are the steps are we doing to, you know, kind of reduce that? And what can be a normalized number that, you know, we can see? Because from what we can see, like, it's like nearly more than a quarter sale, right? So just wanted to know your thoughts about, you know, our trade receivables, sir.
So, Darshan, the way we look at is, given the fact that we are a technology aggregator where we buy on credit from the OEMs and sell on credit to the system integrators and the end customers, we always look at the holistic picture, which is the net working capital base, including the debtors, payables, means creditors, and inventory. All put together, this quarter or this nine-month period, we have been stable on the, what do you call it, as the receivables positions as well as the net working capital position. We are at around 51 days as of 31st December 2025.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So I'll get back in the queue. I have more questions. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kartik from RK Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Actually, you know, on the ground level, I wanted to understand when you deploy your security solutions, right? Are these enterprises asking for, you know, what kind of security are they asking? Like, are they asking for data, you know, data sovereignty? Basically, you know, between the inside the data center, there's a lot of data security risks. Are they asking for that, or are they asking for cybersecurity? What exactly are they asking at the ground level?
Kartik, am I getting your name right, Kartik? Kartik, right?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Kartik. Sunil here.
Yeah.
See, there's a plethora of solutions that can be offered as cybersecurity. It's just not only concentrated to data centers. You have the edge. When I say edge, the laptops, the mobile. You know, if you're in a critical mission environment, then your mobile, you know, that everything forms part of IT. So we secure end-to-end from data center to the edge. And in between data in motion, data at rest, everything needs to be secured. So there are multiple. I think that sky is the limit in terms of the offering that we have from cybersecurity perspective. We have about close to, if I'm getting my figures right, about 70-75 OEMs in cybersecurity space alone.
I see. So it's spread across, right? But even.
Yeah. Yeah. Spread across.
Suppose I focus only on the. Yeah. Because you started saying 80,000 GPUs. So let's say I want to focus on the data center because, I mean, these GPUs are part of data centers, right? So is the security stack that you are building, is it, like, traditionally different from a, you know, regular data center? You know, how is your. I'm just trying to understand what is the moat here, right? Like, how is this security solution drastically different from traditional data centers that we had? And, you know, what are those solutions that gives you an, you know, an edge over what solutions we had earlier?
I get your point, Kartik. So Kartik, it is like this, you know. If you ask me, traditional data centers were, what do you call, CPU-based, and then the infrastructure that was required, or the network that was required, the cooling that was required, the architecture that was there available, what for a normalized data center is to be, you know, that's what we have seen and heard about.
Yes.
With GPU coming in, the underlying, what do you call, the network changes, the routing switching changes, the infra changes, the cooling changes, everything changes. Now, not many data centers are, what do you call, they are all gearing up. If you see, I don't want to take the names, but then some of them that they are building their data centers based on only GPUs and not on the traditional data centers. Having given that, it is all about the data that they are processing in their data centers, holding it, okay, that all needs to be secured. That is where our cybersecurity solution comes in. And if you see, most of the OEMs that we represent today are also, what you call, those level of data center readiness they have shown. That means they are AI ready. They themselves have built a lot of AI tools within their security solutions, which can give you a real-time data about what next steps to be taken, what is happening in your network, what provisional steps you should take in terms of protecting yourself. So all those things. So if you ask us, currently our data from a security OEM perspective, they are all AI-ready cybersecurity solutions that we have.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And just one last question. You,
sir,
you mentioned OT.
To rejoin the queue, please.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Karthik.
The next question is from the line of Patanjali from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. So when I look at this application lifecycle management segment, right, it has witnessed significant decline on both in three months of Q3 and 9 months FY26. What is the reason? Any structural changes? What has happened? If you can just throw some light on that.
Yeah, so there has been a significant drop. We noticed that, and we are also we are working on it. What happened is that we got this, as we mentioned to you in the past, if you have heard us. This ALM segment of the market has been fairly new for us. We just brought in it. We got ready about one and a half years back. While we were planning as a, numbers for this year, we somehow overlooked, that is something called as TCV and ACV, total contract value and annual contract value. We, in a normal course of business, we should take 60% of our total contract value towards annual contract value, that is in the first year of billing. But in this ALM space, it is not like that. It is generally, typically what happens is that it is 25% annual contract value as compared to a 60% contract value. So we went wrong with our numbers a little bit here and there. But then having said that, we may not achieve 100%, but in Q4 we are likely to bounce back at close to about 70-75% of our budgeted figures. But we are course correcting it in the subsequent coming financial year. We are taking numbers according to that.
Sir, is that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from Kinzuna Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity. So my first question is, like, when we say that we have a pipeline of 4,000 to 5,000 crores, so how much is like our win rate in that pipeline? Like, even in the past, there must be some kind of trend.
Thanks for the question, Nikhil. The pipeline, what we see is the amount of opportunities which we are looking at this point of time actively. This is a very clean pipeline, as Sunil has mentioned. In addition to this pipeline, we also will have new deals coming in, new opportunities coming in because of our extensive relationships with the end customers, system integrators, and the OEMs. So if you see the win rate, traditionally the win rate has been around 30-35% if you see it. This plus the actual renewal business which is there, plus the new business which is there, all this put together, we believe that there is a high likelihood of the performance being in line with the market.
Okay, sir. Thank you for that. So my next question is on if we compare it from gross billing to revenue. So we have seen that revenue as a percentage of gross billing, it has been kept on declining. Like, it was 44% in FY23, and it has been declining 3Q FY25, 2Q FY26. Now we are just 33.7% of the revenue for the gross billing is just 33.7%. So is there like our software services and allied support business, is that getting lower in the whole billing mix and we're doing more of a hardware working? And if that is the case, sir, what are the kind of margins that we do on the hardware and the software side of the business?
Nitin, just let me understand your question correctly. You are telling me that my net revenue as a percentage of gross sales has been coming down.
Yes, sir.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, I mean, I don't have the data. I'm going with what you are saying it. If that is the case, the interpretation which you have taken is completely opposite. If my net revenue as a percentage of my gross sales is coming down, my software revenue is actually going up. Because the net revenue consists of the entire hardware revenue plus the gross margin of the software revenue. If this as a percentage of my total revenue is or total gross sales is coming down, my software and supports revenues are actually going up. That is point number one. Point number two, with regards to the take rate, as we have mentioned in our previous calls as well, when our sales team go to the end customers, postal system integrators, and work with them, they do not differentiate between hardware and software. They understand what is the requirement of the customers and provide a solution accordingly. And the margins are also negotiated on that. Hence, in any given deal where there is hardware and software, the margins are pretty much equal for the entire deal. Margins vary for us on a deal-to-deal basis rather than hardware to software and other things.
You said that helps. Thank you for that. So that's it. So that's my those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakshal Jain from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. My first question is that in our pipeline or order book, is the segmental split vertical-wise between cybersecurity, ILM, data center, ALM, is that similar to what the revenue has been so far?
Just one second.
Sort of what the matter? What the?
Sorry. I had some disturbance, so I'm just waiting for the disturbance to go.
Yeah, this is Krishnaraj here. Yeah, this is Krishnaraj here. Just to answer you in general, traditionally the cybersecurity is been the highest contributing technology bucket for us. I'm very sure. Look at the funnel. What we have. It tends that the similar contribution would be there in the funnel which we are pursuing to. You can add the Swarup. I just filled in for you.
Thanks. If I see the numbers which I have around out of the 4,500 crores, or we have close to around 1,800 to 2,000 crores of it would be cybersecurity for us, the funnel which is there. And the rest are amongst the other three verticals, which means that broadly these are in lines with our the revenue mix. Revenue mix for us for cybersecurity is around 50%, and funnel is almost around 40-45% or so. Hence, it is broadly the same number.
Understood. I mean, fair to assume that the software gross margins between the different segments are largely similar.
As I mentioned in my previous question, the margins for us are negotiated on a deal-to-deal basis. And a deal consists of one or multiple segments in it. A deal can have multiple OEMs, both of hardware and software, spreading across multiple tech segments, including cybersecurity, ILM, DCI, and ALM, etc. Hence, the margins are on a deal-to-deal basis. It would not be right for us to compare the margins on a segment-wise or hardware versus software-wise.
Understood. Got it. Yeah. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajakumar Vaidyanathan from RK Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mr. Rajakumar.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, sorry to labor on that question on your Q4 expected performance. So the question is, you know, you guided for 20% growth on the bottom line. So if you look at your FY25 numbers, and based on that, you know, looks like you have to repeat whatever bottom line you have done for this 9 months, that will get repeated in Q4. That's what I understand. That's the clarification. So just to, you know, again, expanding on the same question, I just want to know what is the lever that that is driving the bottom line in Q4? Is that the rebate that they're expecting from OEM that is what will drive the bottom line performance? Or there will be also a revenue driver as well in Q4?
Great, Rajkumar. Thanks for that question. What we have said, or what Sunil has said, is we are talking of around 20 to 22% growth in the PAT for the full year as compared to the previous year, which means that the PAT we are looking at is somewhere between 103 to 105 crores, which means that this number is on a normalized basis without taking the impact of the labor code in it. On this basis, if we are looking at, anywhere around 43 to 45 crores of PAT for this period. Last year, same period, we did around 36 to 37 crores of PAT, which means that we are looking at a 20% growth in PAT in the Q4 as compared to the previous year Q4. This is, what you call it, as impacted by multiple things. Yes, the rebate is there, which is one element of it. And definitely for us, Q4 has been significantly larger in terms of the revenue contributions for the full year per se. The higher revenue with what you call it as fixed cost being fixed, our operating EBITDAs and the PBTs will be higher in this quarter. That has been a historical trend, and we believe that it will continue the same this year as well.
Okay. Okay. And the second question, just a housekeeping question. So I see, when I see your September cash flows, I see almost a 40 crore tax payout vis-a-vis a 10 crore tax provision. So what is driving this higher tax payout? Is it due to higher TDS by customers, or is there something else that I'm missing?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
No, I'm looking at your cash flow statements that you have given in your September financials. So that I see under the taxes paid line item, you have paid almost 42 crores of taxes. And whereas I see your tax provision for 6 months, it is only in the range of 10 to 12 crores.
Okay.
So what is driving this higher tax payout?
I'll explain you, right? If you see the nature of the business which we are, as explained in the previous question, we are significantly high on software. When we sell our software-related businesses to our customers, they deduct TDS, a TDS of around 10%. Whereas our effective tax on our gross sales is somewhere around 1 to 2%. Given that there is a high amount of tax which is deducted by the, what you call it as customers, and then we will get in the form of income tax refunds. Yes, we apply every year for the LDC, lower reduction certificate, and we operate at a lower reduction certificate of 2, 2.5%. Still, at the beginning of the year, we estimate we work with some 500 partners. There will be new partners coming in each year. Those guys will be deducting at 10%. There will also be certain partners where they grow significantly as compared to the other partners, where they cross their limits of LDCs and higher deductions happen. Hence, you always will see the higher, what you call it as, tax paid than the actual tax liability which is there, and this amount is being refunded. On a yearly basis, if you see, last year we would have got around 40 to 45 crores of refund from the income tax department.
Okay, got it. I think there is some optimization you can see, you can make there, if you can do go for LDC, which you kind of articulated.
Yeah, we are working with the department. Hopefully, department will be more considerate towards us.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritesh from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
So this on the pipeline side or on the order book side, can you give us some numbers in terms of the last three quarters, how it would have changed, and vis-a-vis some comparison last year, so that we get some trends in terms of you know, how the visibility in the business is improving.
Okay, thanks, Prakash. I would like to call out like this, right? This question regarding the pipelines have started coming in only after we have gone public from investors like you. And only from the last quarter onwards, we are adding up things and then talking all this stuff. Sorry, just a second. Yes, Asha, let us extend and address all these four questions which are there. I know we are running out of time, but let us extend this, which is here, and address the questions. Yeah, sorry, some housekeeping here. Sudesh, just coming back to your question, right? Over the last 2-3 quarters is what we are measuring the, what you call it as pipeline on a quarterly basis and see how it is there and then moving ahead. Until then, our way of estimating the business, forecasting the business has been slightly different. Now, with regards to the pipeline, I think this 4,500 crores of clean pipeline which we see is considerably better than the previous quarters. I think last quarter I made a call, in my call I've said that as of last quarter we had something around 2,500 crores of pipeline. This has moved to around 4,500 crores. That itself says that it's a very positive sign.
You said that the way you forecast your business has changed after listing. So obviously we don't know the methods of your forecast before listing, but how confident are you in terms of delivering based on whatever your revised forecast methods or revised visibility methods are in place? So how confident are you to deliver the growth guidance?
I think the major change in the way in which we forecast is has moved from yearly to quarterly. Because before the listing life, we are always on a quarterly basis.
After speaking to us, people like us, your forecasting has started moving quarterly. So which means you become more granular in your forecasting. It's a good way.
Yeah. So everything is
Should we believe it? You have grown more granular and you are more confident on your. Now you are talking about the next quarter and the full year, right?
Pratish, we are talking about this quarter per se and this full year per se, and I think we are fairly confident of what we are talking.
Oh, perfect. That was assuring enough. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Patanjali from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Hi. This is a more generic question. But just to get your views, right? So, see, over the last few days, we have seen a lot of noise around AI. And today also, we have seen a lot of sell-offs in this IT sector, right? So, there are two questions there. But firstly, does AI have any impact in the way we do our business? And secondly, if the use case for the system integrator itself goes away, does iValue have any use case?
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're asking that, is it an opportunity or is it a risk or a threat?
Right now, as we speak
and as we envisage the way the AI, the shift is happening, we consider it to be an opportunity for us. That is what I called out in my opening statement and where I covered each of our pillars and how AI is actually being an opportunity for us going forward. So that is, I consider it to be a new segment of market that would be opening up. And we enjoy actually going and selling deeper into the same segment of the customers that we have already sold. We already have an established relationship. When they start adopting to AI and all, our significance further enhances with them. And we love that opportunity that is waiting for us. So we consider it to be an opportunity, Chief. Whatever is happening in the AI segment, it just opens up new Pandora's box for us. Because we deal in a sector which is a sunrise sector, and we consider that sun will never set on this kind of a sector.
But so many of the products that you suggest to the client, right, they are developed by the system integrator, right? So if AI is doing that job, what is the use case for iValue? That is the question. If AI can self-suggest products for a client's use case?
Yeah. See, at the moment, what happens is that, yes, I know, during our earlier presentation, we did mention that why we tag along with the SI and why can't we do deals directly with customers. The reason being that the SI develops the application for them and we go and skirt around with our solution around that application to protect and all. At the most, what would happen is that let's assume that, you know, because of AI, an application gets, the SIs get impacted because of that. They may not be so relevant for application development and customers will start doing it on their own. How much ever you do using AI, the assisted intelligence, you need to get a human interface to put those logics in place. So we consider that worst come worst situation, which I don't see, foresee, but in an event, since I have to answer to your question, if I worst come worst, if I envisage that SI may not be relevant, we will still continue to be relevant because whatever the customer is going to do at his place, we need to still do whatever we are doing with an SI today. We need to still come and skirt around the application that you develop in-house, and the data that you the data needs to be protected, needs to be available, needs to be scalable. We'll continue doing that with the customer. Only change would happen is that I'll have to start billing to the customer directly. If they see no relevance with the SI system integrator, which is not going to be the case. I'm talking about a worst combo case.
Yeah, this is Kiaris here. Just to add on what Sunil said, adopting an AI at very large enterprise is a huge exercise. It just can't happen overnight. So yeah. The role of an SI, role of a product, role of an application continue to be there because we have just started the journey of AI. AI need to be adopted at every layer of data, network, a complete infrastructure of application. So it is just a beginning. There is a huge amount of work for every partner in our ecosystem. It's not going to see an end very easily. That's for sure.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Darshil Javeri from Crown Capital.
Hold par rakha hai. Kripya line par.
The next question is from the line of Amar from Lucky Investments Managers. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity. Sir, two questions. In terms of the data center penetration, are we penetrated to 100% of the market? I mean, what would be our market share, let's say, in the overall data center offerings of our product?
Yeah, so Amar, when we say data center, typically what comes to our mind thought is that the Yotas of the world or the controllers and the next gen of the
world. You are more into the in-house data center, right? Enterprise.
Yeah, so when you talk about, like, now you talk about it, just taking names, please don't relate anything otherwise. Like HDFC Bank or ICICI Bank or all these people who have got data centers, they have their application, core applications running within the premises. Now that is where we come relevant. So we have solutions to cater to that. Also, we can cater to the on-cloud data centers, co-location data centers.
So we as a player would be, what kind of market share will be dominating, let's say, in the on-prem data center as well as the co-location data center?
Honestly, we have never validated or evaluated ourselves in that nature, but good that you brought this point. I'll make a note of this probably next time when we have this call. I will ensure that we give you some pointers around it.
Okay. Second question is, sir, of your cybersecurity business, how much of your cybersecurity business is linked with your data center offering?
See, most of our cybersecurity solutions are in a blended model. It is data center as well as all those assets that connect to the data center. So you cannot alienate data center separately to all those infrastructure that connects to the data center. So we cater to both the segments of the market. So it is not data center. When we say it, the cybersecurity solution is separate. If you see that the pillar of cybersecurity is separate from the data center. When we come to data center, we call it an infrastructure. And that is where the DCI space that we talk about. sense, you should look at it a little alienated. But if you're going to relate cybersecurity to only data centers, it is difficult now. How do I answer that?
Okay. Okay. No, what I was trying to understand, like, let's say, when you say about the data center security, NOC, SOC, WAF, everything linked to that, and then is it an enterprise-grade cybersecurity offerings also we do along with the data center? I mean, just trying to understand.
Yeah, so data center is separate from a NOC and a SOC, and all. Not many people will ever go and put it alongside the data center. While you'll have a NOC and SOC outside of it, monitoring the what is happening there, but a NOC and SOC is separate to the data center.
Sure.
Just to add on Sunil's explanation on that, sir, if you look at data center, there are two kinds in general if you talk about. One is in-premises and another one is in the cloud. Okay, so the data is there in both the places. Hence, the security is must in both the places. It could be a CapEx sector, very much requires cybersecurity. If the customer top data center, which is cloud in other sense, need maybe one notch more cybersecurity than the on-premise. So it's an opportunity for both the places. And most of the time, it is a same solution, rather similar, I would say, the which works on both the sides. So we have offerings covering both on-prem and on-cloud on cybersecurity.
Okay. On-prem and on-cloud. So that on-prem and on-cloud, everything is clubbed into the cybersecurity segment, right? Everything is...
Absolutely.
And sir, like cybersecurity as a segment, data center as a segment, itself is growing by at a high, very, very high industry growth rate. Now, given that we have a large part of revenue coming from it, so don't we see, like, you know, acceleration in our overall growth rate, given that now the acceleration in the industry is coming at a higher pace? So you guiding about just 18-20% growth rate, is it like very conservative growth for the company?
Yeah, kind of. But if you look at it, all those news that comes as data centers, as I called out in my opening reading. If you see data centers, they are, you start with civil work and rest of the things. So what is happening, they are putting the infrastructure in place. Rest of things will come. Now, that is where we are seeing that there could be a potential requirement that will come up in next year and the subsequent year. So the next 5 years is going to be a journey. We are watching those data centers, at what level it is, at what life cycle it is, how, what is the readiness. Based on that is what we are. If you remember, Adani was talking about their data centers about 3 years back. Now it's what is taking shape. So that's the case. So yes, there are a lot of data centers that is mushrooming. They are talking about it. A lot of people are investing in the infrastructure from civil work to building to cooling to all those things. Once they are ready, that is when our role will start. So yes, we are looking at a very ambitious figure, but we would like to keep it as moderate as possible in terms of our growth, which we have told you, and we'll maintain that. Least that we'll lose, that we'll maintain that.
Got
definitely. We all can ask for better. Even I would ask for better, but we'll not shy away from doing those greater numbers. But right now, I would like to give you a moderate outlook.
Got it, sir. Got it. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Radha Kumar Vaidyanathan from RK Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Raj. Hi, good evening.
Yeah. Thanks for the follow-up. So just two questions. The first one is, do we have any reseller arrangements with any of the OEM folks?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
No, like, do you work with any of the OEM folks on the reseller arrangements, particularly in the software side? Do we have any, like, tie-up with folks like Microsoft or Adobe of the world?
So we majorly focus our activities around the four tech segments which are there, which are cybersecurity, data center infrastructure, ILM, and ALM. We have relationships with more than 100 OEMs, and 70% of our business is software in nature. Does that help, Mr. Rajkumar?
Yeah.
Raj, to your question, if straight answer is that no, we don't deal with Adobe and Microsoft.
Okay.
Nor do we have a distribution agreement.
Okay. Yeah, just one more question. So, I just want to know, what is your take on this Anthropic plugin that was released recently? Will it be a headwind or a tailwind for you?
I would consider this as a tailwind because we are not into LPO service, legal processing, but it's a good opportunity. I'm not saying against any lawyers and all, nothing is going to be taken away from them. But I know that if the customers on their own start generating these kind of contracts and they're going to put an LLM around in their network, it's a greater opportunity because you need to protect those contents, what you create.
Okay.
And I don't think everybody is immediately going to move to that because I don't know whether you are aware, whatever you try to call out from this ChatGPT or this the name that you mentioned, all those content, by when they give and you use it, you have no IP around it. They can use that for any other. So I don't think so. Anything is going to move quickly. But if you ask me, in future would it? Definitely, people have to get used to it, and they will definitely going to move into that. At least people like individuals like us, probably we may try to use it. That's for a discussion purpose.
Okay. So it's clearly a tailwind for high value.
Yeah, it could potentially become a tailwind for us. But I don't think lawyers or solicitors would like to use it too much.
Yeah. Got it.
But I would consider that this is good for the vernacular medium people who have done their lawyers and all the lawyership and all, because they will find it very easier to convert into and converse it in or transcript it into English.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The last question is from the line of Kunal from Alpha Alternates. Please go ahead. Yes, Mr. Kunal, go with the question, please. If that was the last question for the day, I would now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, this is Karis here. It's been nice to interact with all of you today. Thank you for your continued support.
Thank you.
Swaroop here. Thank you for joining us today. It was really great interacting with you. Any open questions, please feel to reach out to us. EY is our IR, and you have my contacts as well as theirs. So please feel free to reach out for any open questions.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of iValue Info Solutions Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you.